cases here. We spent the last better part of an hour talking about three different cases, Canadian cases, all different, but have some similarities. And it ultimately leads itself to the question, are there some crimes so heinous that you should not be up for parole and back in the community, especially when we look at the two cases, one of them, a Saskatchewan case involving Tammy Goforth, who was convicted of second-degree murder and criminal negligence in 2016 for starving a four-year-old child to death who was under her care and abusing the four-year-old's younger sister. Now she's up for day parole. The killer is Tammy Goforth. Keeping in mind, she was sentenced to life in prison, no chance of parole for 17 years. This is year 10, and we're already looking at day parole. The other case is Alan Schoenberg. This is a BC case for a man convicted in the brutal slayings of his three children who were 5, 8, and 10 years old at the time, living in Merritt, BC. Schoenberg, back in 2010 in his trial, was found not criminally responsible for the stabbing and smothering of his three children. He ended up being found not criminally responsible, but of course spending time in a psychiatric, closed custody psychiatric facility. And now he too has been granted a conditional discharge after the brutal slayings of his three children. It's got people calling and people texting about, do we have it right, the criminal justice system? Now, the other side of this is where we started the conversation, is the 20-year-old man back in 2020 who brought a gun to a funeral. While on the outside of the event, a vehicle drove by, fired some shots. Terrell Burke Whitaker, who clearly had some sort of gang connections or was involved in criminal activity, he'd never been charged criminally before this event, pulls a gun out of his waistband, fires a couple of shots at the 401, didn't hit any vehicle, didn't hit any people, but was charged. In the time between the trial when he was charged, then he's released awaiting sentencing, he basically gets his life together. He does a number of things where he starts a business. He works for a landscaping company. He is going to the Ontario Fire Academy to become a full-time firefighter. Did over 110 hours of volunteer time at a care home, in a long-term relationship, consistent relationship, taking care of his five-year-old daughter. So the judge took that into consideration and gave him a more lenient sentence, if you will. Basically, a conditional sentence of 2 years less a day to be served in the community, followed by 3 years of probation. So where does this leave you feeling our justice system is? You've got the front end. That's the case from Toronto. Then you've got the back end, which is people being released on parole after being convicted of serious crimes involving children. Lots of calls coming in on this. I'm going to start with Larry in Saskatoon. Larry, thanks for your patience. I know you've been waiting on the phone for a second. Your thoughts as we talk about the criminal justice system and in specific these three cases.
Well, the three cases are different and serious in their own way. The problem we're dealing with in sentencing is some years ago, the Liberal government changed the sentencing priorities. They made rehabilitation as number one when it used to be public safety. And punishment is at the sort of it, that was part of it as well. And then you've got rehabilitation was the third. So they've taken rehabilitation, put it at the top. And once you get social justice lawyers and social justice professors, then that's what they gravitate to. Now, the three cases, one, clearly criminal insanity, and that's what he was found. And under public safety, they'd be keeping him there for 25 years to life, something like would be too old to do much harm. Mm-hmm. The one with Goforth sounds like a dark triad. And when you've got psychopathy and sadism mixed in, that's serious. Again, public safety. Now, the case of the social justice warrior professor, she's talking, well, he had a prohibited firearm. Well, basically, and he went to a funeral. I'm guessing the funeral was probably for a gangster, a fellow gangster who was killed. That's my guess. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
It doesn't say who the funeral was for. Yeah,
he's a gangster, and that's why he took the gun. So he's part of a criminal gang. Another criminal gang drives by, and he shoots at them. So criminal gangs are a big deal in Canada. They didn't used to be. They were kind of small and manageable by the justice system. But now they're not manageable because things have been turned around. Mm-hmm. And so this is far more serious because of that. Maybe the low end of the incarceration, but it's also easy for organized crime to have someone, have a child and have a family and get a job and kind of watch. You know, it may be that he's rehabilitated, but for the public safety and the punishment deterrence factor, I think he should be doing some time in jail. So I've covered those three, but when the conservatives, if they ever do get back into power, they didn't change those priorities when they were in power. And again, you've got the problem. You've got social justice judges. They twist things to their ideology, not to our traditional values.
The whole sentencing thing I'm seeing. Thanks, Larry. I appreciate the call. The number of texts that are coming in talking about sentencing is really difficult to understand. It seems to vary so much depending on which judge you get, even what part of Canada you're in. So many principles that fall under sentencing, the aggravating factors, the mitigating factors, the charter considerations, the precedents that are out there. All of those things, of course, factor into how sentences are handed down. I wanted to go back to the text line. I noticed a number of texts coming in. With these people that take a life like Tammy Goforth did, should never be able to see the outdoors again. People that do these nasty crimes know that they will get out in 10 or 17 years. So we need changes to the law. This is Brad in Craik. Thank you very much. Evan, I think most will agree when we say that we need harsher penalties for crimes that are committed. We need to create an incentive not to commit the crime, because criminals right now are doing as they please, knowing that they get a slap on the wrist. There was a text I saw here, Cal. Yeah, Cal in Oxbow. I do believe that empathy is important. However, it needs to be measured and guarded empathy. Our society, I believe, is infected with toxic empathy. That might be he might have to copyright that phrase, toxic empathy. We want to make excuses for all kinds of behavior, reasons for all kinds of behavior. This is the problem with toxic empathy. You cannot blame everything that you do as an adult on your upbringing. It's time for you to find ways to move past that, even if it includes counseling, but you cannot continue to use that as an excuse. Bruce in Bigger said, I just read about the two cases that you're talking about today, and it's ludicrous that either of these people are being released. Now, to show how screwed up our system is, I just read that a judge in Alberta sentenced a man to 8 years for torturing and killing rabbits. Don't get me wrong, I'm not condoning what he did. It's just a matter of perspective. That's Bruce in Bigger. John from White City said, honestly, I can't even listen to stories about the justice system right now. We need a redo badly. Cameron in Regina, with a couple of texts coming in here, said the idea is completely flawed. This would give license for anyone to commit crimes, knowing that all they have to do is smarten up and change if they are caught. Maybe this ridiculous idea should be used in all walks of life. Your credit rating should be cleared after bankruptcy as long as you agree to continue paying your bills. I'm flabbergasted to hear a former chief agree with this form of justice. Cameron. Well, all I'm saying is, I'm not saying I agree with it. I'm saying this is what happened in the case. We had Lisa Kerr on to talk about Terrell Burke Whitaker. This is a guy, I'm asking the question, why are you bringing a gun to a funeral in the first place? If you do, that tells me that you're not just mildly, like, on the fringe involved in potentially some sort of organized crime or youth gang or whatever. You're bringing a gun to a funeral. Now, he had not been convicted of anything prior to that. However, brings the gun out, fires a couple of shots, and the judge ended up saying, I feel like a conditional sentence of 2 years less a day is the right way to go, as opposed to putting you in jail, because in the 3 years, this is part of the problem too, 3 years it took between trial and sentencing, he basically pulled his life together, doing all of those things that we were talking about. 1-877-332-8255. I've got time for one more call. Let's go to the phone line. I've got Nick in Saskatoon. Nick, thanks for joining the conversation. What have you got for me?
So we've got the data, Evan. Norway, treating criminals with empathy and rehabilitation works. The recidivism rate is insanely low. On the other end of it, the U.S., hard punishment doesn't work, and I would argue creates more violence ultimately. So this guy with the gun at the funeral, he got his life together. What's the point of punishing him at this point? Like, just let it go. I agree with that one. But what bothers me is he displayed he was a violent offender, and he was put on bail to begin with instead of locked up.
Mm-hmm.
That's the issue. So Saskatoon, is several years ago, there was a woman involved in that Megan Gallagher case. She actually led police on a drunken chase, killed some teenagers, didn't serve much time in jail, and when she was arrested for the murder of Megan Gallagher, she was actually in prison, or in jail, sorry, on other charges for another crime she committed. Like, we got to work on bail and use that dangerous offender.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, the bail part of this, Nick, I think you've hit the nail on the head there, is the bail part of this is the decision as to whether or not the person should be released. And Lisa, when we had her on just after 10, talked about the reasons, the things that are considered when a judge is deciding whether or not a person will be released, right? You get arrested on a Tuesday night for a crime that you've committed. You either will stay in jail until you go to court, or you will be released with a court date down the road. And if you're released, it's because they believe you will show up to court, and they don't believe that you will either continue the offense or will do more harm in the community. Well, the catch is, I mean, how many times, in fact, almost every time in my policing career that I arrested someone, there was also a charge of breach of probation or breach of undertaking or this shows the willingness to continue. Breach of probation obviously tends to be after they've served some sentence. Breach of undertaking or a breach of a recognizance is because they are out with conditions awaiting trial. So to Nick's point, the bail system, probably the good place to start if we're going to do some reforms of our system. Okay, let's take our break and we'll come back. There's still lots of other things we can chat about, but that's been a good discussion. I appreciate all of the great calls and texts we got there. You're listening to 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Good morning, Evan Gray. Thank you so much for being here. Over the weekend, chatting with a couple of guys who were thinking about and reliving the story that was in the news this past week about Uber Canada come out with its 2026 Lost and Found Index. So this is the company that controls and regulates Ubers in Canada. And the things that Uber drivers have found left in their vehicle after the person that has hired them to give them a ride from point A to point B gets out of their vehicle and leaves behind. We heard about, in Canada, 15-pound frozen turkey, aquarium fish and supplies, a full set of goalie pads. I don't get how this stuff ends up being left behind in a car. Like, you know, okay, so if you jump in the car, you've got your arms full of stuff and you decide you're going to put something in the pocket in front of you in the seat. And then maybe you get talking with the Uber driver or get distracted by a phone call. And then when you get out, but I mean, some of these are big things being left on the seat. If you go to, I mean, they've done this worldwide. So this is the stuff that I've read is lost and found in Canada. But if you look at it worldwide, I mean, they've got the 50 most unique items people have left in an Uber, a set of dentures. How about that? An ankle monitor. Well, something tells me that might have been left on purpose. an oxygen tank, a mannequin, sleep apnea machine, wedding gown, a police radio. Like, do we have police officers taking Ubers and leaving their radio in them? Welding helmet. They have the top 50 most unique lost items. Then they've got the top 10 most commonly forgot items. And each one of these I get. Phone, wallet, keys, headphones, a passport. I mean, that stuff, I'm not saying it's good that it's left behind. A laptop, jewelry, glasses. Those are the types of things you would be expecting to see in there. But, you know, live animals. They've got quite the breakdown online there. You can go and look at the top 20 food and beverage items that are left behind, what days of the week most people are likely to leave things behind, the top 15 luxury items. It's, I don't know. I've never left. I had one incident once in a cab, but it wasn't that I left it on purpose. It fell. I was paying for the cab, reached into my pocket to grab cash, and I had a USB in there back in the days when we carried those around with our, I was on my way to do a presentation at a conference. USB fell out in the cab. I got inside, not there. Called the cab company. Within 3 minutes, the cab was back with my USB. So I was quite, and that was in Ottawa, by the way. But anyway, it's shocking to me. I don't know. Have you left something in a cab or an Uber, or are you one of those people that could leave a 15-pound turkey, frozen turkey, in the backseat of your Uber after you're on your way home from the grocery store? Well, if you are, shoot me a text. Happy to hear from you. 1-877-332-8255. We've been covering a lot of topics this morning, and in the background, as we've been doing this, former Supreme Court of Canada Justice Louise Arbour is officially sworn in as the Governor General. She, of course, replaces outgoing Governor General Mary Simon. In her speech this morning, Louise Arbour thanked Mary Simon for the work that she has done, but talked about the talents and the resources that we have in Canada and the important role that young Canadians are going to play in the decades ahead.
And young Canadians are citizens of the world. They're well-educated, with both deep climate awareness and remarkable digital literacy. And yet, not all of them are able to reach their full potential as they face the headwinds of inequality. In that, we are failing them, and it is our shared responsibility to correct course.
It's interesting to watch this unfold. Louise Arbour is not unanimously supported across Canada as a choice for Governor General. Many people have been critical of her rulings as a former Supreme Court justice. Some of the things that she's been outspoken on in the past, saying it's not congruent with someone who should be stepping into this Governor General spot. Nonetheless, she was sworn in this morning in Ottawa to that position. Okay, we'll take our break. When we come back, we're going to do a quick check-in on where things are at with Minette Farms. We've talked about that and their creditor protection over the last couple of months. Been a conversation here on the show. We'll do a check-in. Lots of land is up for sale as a result of meeting some of those credit obligations. That's where we go next here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.